So it is about recognizing what are the things that drain you in your day, what are the things that energize you, and how can you balance that every day? So that at the end of the day, you're not drained and exhausted and fall asleep on the couch.
Write the world-changing book that will help grow your personal brand and your business as it makes the world a better place. Welcome to the Author's Corner, hosted by Robin Colucci. Every episode, we bring you some of the most successful authors, as well as other industry experts, to share some inspiration, motivation, tactical strategy, and fun. We'll also talk about the challenges and trends in the publishing industry. Don't get stuck in the idea phase. Join the Author's Corner today. Start writing the book you've dreamed about.
Hello and welcome to the Author's Corner. I am your host, Robin Colucci, and today we are going to talk about a very serious problem. It is the problem of burnout, and I have learned from our guest today that burnout is something that impacts a lot of people, and I think the most disturbing thing I learned is that burnout can really sneak up on you. So listen up, listeners, because Mello Colarco, the award-winning author of Beating Burnout, Finding Balance, Mindful Lessons for a Meaningful Life, that was published by Wiley, is a mindfulness and high-performance coach. He's also a keynote speaker and corporate programs facilitator, and his work has helped many CEOs and other leaders, corporate executives, medical professionals, and elite athletes and other high achievers to perform at their absolute best without burning out. Today in our conversation, we unpack this idea of burnout, and Mello is going to share his insights on how to prevent it and, if you happen to have fallen into a burnout situation, how to treat it. He explains the different phases of stress that lead to burnout and highlights the importance of self-awareness as well as self-care. He also specifically, and this is especially, I think, of interest to you, my dear listener, tips for authors on managing their energy and creating boundaries. So there's a lot more here, even beyond that. I know that you'll get a ton of value from this, and so I hope that you enjoy. Mello, welcome to the Author's Corner.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
Well, it's delightful to have you, and I just could not resist your topic because I think that burnout, you know, it's always been a thing, I guess, but lately it seems like, I don't know, just from my own personal observations and, you know, just the constant inundation of everything all at once, all the time. And it can really make a person feel like there's just no way to get downtime, right? There's just no escape. So I'm excited to have you. I want to start though, before we get into this amazing value that you're going to share with our listeners and some great ideas for beating burnout. Before we get to that, I'd love for you to share with us what attracted you to the subject of burnout to the point where you were interested enough to write a book about it.
Yeah, sure. So it's been an evolution in progress. I've always worked in a space where I'm helping people and coaching people and supporting people, including many companies. And it saddens me when I walk into a company and run a seminar or a workshop and I look around the room and I see so many people fatigued and tired and burnt out. And so that was the catalyst of it. And then through the pandemic, obviously, with the rise of mental health issues, I had a burning desire to help as many people as possible. So in my seminars and workshops, I supported over 150,000 people, over the course of those couple of years. And I thought, I actually even want to help more. I want to help as many people as possible. I'm on a mission to support and help as many people as possible with my toolkit and techniques that I've learned, to beat burnout and find balance in their life.
So that's wonderful. What were your seminars about before you were doing? Was it still burnout or was it something else?
More general well-being. So general well-being. I teach a lot of mindfulness and mindfulness techniques, resilience and a whole range of things around stress, but not particularly about burnout. So normally I'd meet people in the work that I do in coaching in the more the chronic stress phase, you know, so where it's like you said before, too much going on, overstimulated, overwhelmed, can't switch off. But I did notice over the last few years more of the burnout phase that I'm meeting people. So no longer is it too much, it's more like not enough and under-resourced.
Oh, interesting. What do you mean by that? Say more about that. So, what do you mean about not enough?
Yeah, so when you follow the evolution of stress, you know, there's everyday stress, and everyday stress is a good zone. We actually need some stress to, you know, help us achieve our goals, to drive us, to motivate us. As long as we're looking after ourselves and we have our self-care practices in place, we can cope with life no problem. If we're not looking after ourselves on a daily basis, it turns into this chronic stress. And you see it around the place. It's a bit manic. It's a bit crazy. Like I said, can't switch off, can't sleep at night. You've got adrenaline and cortisol going through the body. So that's more like too much. Can't switch off. Then there's a tipping point. And the tipping point is, you know, usually when you're feeling overwhelmed, it starts turning into what's called allostatic stress. And allostatic stress is now not enough. So all that constant wear and tear on the body and mind through those stress phases is now starting to wear us out. So now the language around this is more like, I'm tired, I'm exhausted, I can't keep going like this. And it's more like not enough, you know, fuel in the tank, not enough resources in the tank. And then the end consequence is burnout. And when it is burnout, it's dysfunctional, like you can't even function anymore. It's no longer not enough. It's like, I've just got nothing left.
Wow. So that is, see, I didn't even know that that's what burnout is, that it's like the other end of the, it's way at the far end of the spectrum of overwhelm.
Yes, it's cumulative. It's cumulative. So over time, it accumulates and then it slowly sneaks up on you. Most of the people that I interviewed for the book didn't realize they were burning out until it was too late. So I interviewed over 200 people, leaders, CEOs, executives, athletes, a whole diverse range of people. And 90% of them did not even realize it was happening until they were already in the sort of orange red zone, in that allostatic stress zone. So it's very cumulative over time and it can sneak up on you.
So what are some of the things that people experience when they're getting maybe close to that danger zone, but they could still not notice, like still think that it's just normal stress?
Yes, yes.
What are some of those gray area symptoms?
The gray areas, the three main areas.
Or maybe they're not gray areas to you, but maybe gray areas to your reader.
Yeah, yeah.
Until they read your book, of course.
Totally, yeah. So there's a difference between stress and burnout in a way. So the first signs are, you know, when it's ongoing, like the stress is ongoing. And if you're stressed, for example, and you have a good night's sleep, or you have a weekend away, or you know, have a little holiday, you can recharge your batteries. But if you're burnt out, it doesn't matter how much sleep you get. It doesn't matter how much rest you get. You still wake up tired and exhausted. It's about understanding that. So the first signs would be those, you know, physical signs of exhaustion, tiredness, maybe a bit reactive, a bit snappy, a bit more negative or cynical towards your work and towards the people around you. And then as simple as like making a few mistakes or errors or things that would normally be easy for you are a real effort. So that's in a way, that's the three criteria that the WHO in 2019, you know, their definition of burnout is a syndrome conceptualized as resulting in chronic workplace stress that has not been successfully managed. And the three criteria, feelings of that energy depletion and exhaustion. And the second one is, like I said before, that increased mental distance from your job and the people around you, and you might be a bit more negative and cynical and reactive. And the last one is reduced professional efficacy. So that efficiency in your work where you make more errors and everything just seems hard. So they're usually the signs to look out for.
I'm guessing that this is reversible or at least treatable to some extent, or there certainly would not be your wonderful book. So tell us a little bit about that. Like, what does somebody do if they're listening to this and going, oh my.
Yeah, yeah, reverse.
I thought I just needed a long weekend, but apparently I'm burnt out. So what do we do with this poor listener?
Yeah, it's a good point. And reversible, it's almost like we're better off being preventative to start with, as opposed to waiting until you're in that sort of orange and red zone. You may as well, you know, catch it earlier as soon as possible, and even better, prevent it. So having preventative measures. So in the same way that burnout is cumulative in a negative way, if we have our self-care practices in place, we can actually prevent it happening in the first place. So for me, the way I look at it is the very first step is self-awareness. You can't change what you don't notice. So we have to be more aware of ourselves, be more mindful of our energy, how we spend our energy, how we, you know, eat, sleep, and, you know, do all those self-care practices. So being more aware and being aware of, like, what do I need to do to sort of stay in that good zone there? You can't change what you don't notice is what I always say. And it's really about being aware of that and doing what you need to do to stay in the right lane. So it might be taking a break. It might be, so let's for it say, for example, you're working, you're feeling a little bit stressed, you're feeling a bit tired. It might be taking regular renewal breaks throughout the day, so you're not exhausted at the end of the day, and that doesn't have a cumulative effect. So that's the first step, is self-awareness, you know, making sure that you're aware of what's going on. I always use the analogy of, like, it's a bit like driving the car, and, you know, you drive the car and the oil light flashes on, and then you just ignore the oil light. Don't worry about the oil light, I'll just keep driving. Or the petrol gauge is, you know, running out, the gas tank's running out. So you also just ignore that. So we can't ignore the signs. That's the first step. The second step I say is developing some tools and techniques that helps you to self-regulate in the moment. So if you are feeling stressed or overwhelmed, or it's just becoming all too much, what do you need to do to self-regulate? And it might be a breathing technique. It might be a bit of meditation. It might be just go for a walk or have a little break. So self-regulation is the next step. And the other thing I say, like I said, is in preventative measures, is make sure that your self-care practices are non-negotiable. So by that, I mean eating well, sleeping well, exercising, you know, taking renewal breaks, having downtime. Because what I do know in the work that I do is that when people get stressed, when people get busy, when people get overwhelmed and there's just too much going on, the first thing they do is let go of the thing that they need the most. For example, right. I won't go to the gym tonight, I'm too busy. Or I'll stay up late and I'll finish off that thing, I'll go to bed later. Or I'll just grab some food on the run, I won't cook tonight, I'm too tired. But for me, it's the opposite equation. Make sure you are diligent with your self-care practices and make them non-negotiable so we can prevent burnout happening in the first place.
Yeah, that's really brilliant. That's really brilliant. And makes a whole lot of sense. I thought of another question, which has escaped my mind. I think, you know, you can't help but compare yourself, you know, to what you're hearing. I'm so proud of myself for taking my dog for a walk on the beach at 2 o'clock most days in the afternoon. That's like a big recharger for me, right? Because I know my day is not even usually close to done by two, but it's just a great way to take a break, get some fresh air.
Yeah.
See some beauty around me, you know, it really does make a difference.
Yeah, and dogs are your best accountability buddies, aren't they? They tell you when it's time to walk.
Yes, they know what time it's time to eat and when walk time is and play time.
Non-negotiables on that note, my non-negotiables in self-care practices that I do myself is I get up quite early. I have a dog myself. I take him for a brisk morning walk in the early sunlight to get that serotonin production going and get aroused. And then come home, I do a meditation practice for about 20 minutes, and then I have a healthy breakfast. So that's three wins before the day's even started. That's just for me. And that way there I can coach better. I can run my seminars and workshops better. I can be a better father, better husband, a better person. So they're non-negotiable, and I do that every single day. And like you, usually sometime in the afternoon when I'm feeling a little bit tired, again, we'll take the dog for a little walk around the block and just get some fresh air and recharge. Because sometimes the best thing you need for productivity and performance is actually stopping and pausing.
Yes, so true. I tell my team this also because, you know, like if someone's not feeling well or sick, and I'll be like, rest and get fully healed. Because if you try to come back too soon and you try to push it too soon, you're just going to be sick again sooner and you're not going to feel good anyway. And yeah, I think that's it is a great productivity tip, right? To stop sometimes. And I think that seems counterintuitive to a lot of people, obviously.
Yeah, most people don't give themselves permission to stop. They just think, I'll just finish this last little piece and I'll just keep going. But sometimes the very thing that you need to be more productive and have that clarity is to stop and pause, even if it's just for 2 minutes or 5 minutes. Even the research does say that we can only really work cognitively at our best in periods of 90 minutes to 2 hours. So if you're not stopping every 90 minutes to 2 hours and having a short break, you're actually affecting your productivity and performance, and you're compromising your cognitive ability. Sometimes just stopping for the next, you know, you might, I teach what's called a 90-second breath break. It's 90 seconds, literally stopping and following your breath for 90 seconds. And that can make the world of difference for your next 2 hours of work.
You know, as you're speaking of this particular thing with the 90 minutes to 2 hour window, I can't help but thinking about authors and writing books, because it's funny, like intuitively, I often prescribe that, you know, for my coaching clients, right? Set aside 2 hours and write for 2 hours, and then either end for the day or pick it up again in the morning. I also often recommend early morning before you talk to humans.
Yes.
You can talk to your dog before you write, no problem. But talking to humans, I don't know, takes a different kind of energy. But what are some of your tips for authors? Because obviously we know it's quite a lift to write a book, especially if you also have a job or a career. What's some of your advice for authors?
I like what you just said there, Robin, about chunking your time and you know, writing, you know, when you have most clarity first thing in the morning. For me personally, being a mindfulness coach and being, you know, that's sort of the work I've been doing for the last 30 odd years, is being really mindful of what I'm writing and when. So by that, I mean, you know, in my book, my book has 9 chapters and they're all very pointed chapters. You know, it'd be on self-awareness or self-regulation or, you know, burnout or resilience or purpose and passion. So when I'm writing and I'm writing the stories, because each chapter is framed with a story. So to break it down, 9 chapters, every chapter starts with a story from my cycling adventures around the world. And it'll be, you know, the lesson that I learned from that adventure. And, you know, some of them are pretty tough lessons. And then it'll be the content and the theory around that concept. And then at the end, it'll be the takeaway tip that the reader can take away. So that is the structure for my book on each chapter. So when I'm writing the stories and getting myself engrossed in the story, I'd set myself time to do that and do that only, and really immerse myself in all the senses. So, you know, the sounds, the flavors. So, for example, if I'm in Morocco and I'm imagining the smells of the spices and the sounds of the place there. And what I do, if I then get a thought about some research that I need to back that up, I won't actually do that, because that'll take me out of that place, put it on my park pad and put it on the side. And then I'll do that at another time, because for me, they're very different energies to be writing a story versus some research or data. So that's a big tip that really helped me. You know, being very mindful of what you're writing, because you could easily get hijacked. You could be doing a beautiful flowing story and then suddenly, I need some data to back that up. And then you jump into Google and you lose your flow.
Yeah. And I want to plus what you're saying, because not only do you step out of the flow of wherever you were in your mind, but then you can get hooked into the layers on the internet. And before you know it, you've used all your writing time trying to research this one minor point, probably.
Exactly.
So that's very, very.
Yeah, and I don't know if you, I don't know if you know much about the brain states, the brain frequencies. So, you know, we have what's called beta, alpha, theta, and delta. And the beta brain state is when you're on, you're thinking, you're planning, you're problem solving, you're decision making. So in that beta state, that's when you are writing the facts and the data and the research, and you know, that's a good place to be. But to be creative, you have to drop into those lower states, those alpha and theta states, and that's where creativity comes. That's where inspiration comes. That's where new ideas come. So sometimes we actually need to stop and pause and, you know, do a meditation for a couple of minutes, or just close your eyes and visualize to access those states, because they're two very different states.
Yeah. And I agree with that also. This reminds me of why I object to this idea of like writing your book in 30 days or writing your book in 90 days, even, because, you know, what I have found is a lot of times the best ideas for your book, you know, I found this with clients and with myself, come when you're not looking for them, right? They might come when you're out walking your dog, or when you're in the shower, or when you're doing your gardening, or you're peeling carrots. And if you don't give yourself enough time for those things to get in your unconscious, marinate, connect with other things,
yes.
and then pop, and then pop up, you miss out on the opportunity for all of those revelations.
I agree. And it's quite a process writing the book. I had quite a tight deadline because I had a traditional publisher being Wiley, and I had quite a tight deadline to write my book. And so I had to like live, breathe it and eat it while still doing a job. And you're right, sometimes you go away from it and then you go for a walk and then, oh, that'll be great to add on to that bit, and that'll be a fantastic little thing to add on there. But you need to give it space. You need to actually give it space to do that, and you know, you're in that zone. I ended up writing too many words, so I wrote 72,000 words and I was only supposed to write 58,000 words.
An overachiever.
Exactly. And you know the story about killing those darlings. I think it was really hard.
Yeah.
Yeah. Ironically, the chapter that I had to eliminate, I had to eliminate a whole chapter to get those 11,000 words out. It was a chapter all about letting go. Yes.
That's poetic right there.
Yes.
That's an interesting 58,000, not 60. Okay.
Yeah. And I'm happy with that in a way because the book is on burnout, like I said, and you don't want to be, if someone is burning out.
Well, that's true. You don't
need. Yeah, you don't need.
If someone's burned out, they don't need a doorstop.
No, exactly. And, yeah. And sometimes it's what you leave out that actually matters in a way, and it gives the book space. And I'm glad when I look at the book.
That's true too.
There's plenty of space and there's plenty of tips and, you know, what I did with the book, my idea was to simplify the complex, to make it really accessible, implementable.
Fantastic.
People that read the book, they say to me, you know, Mello, it's fantastic. I can take away a tip and I can implement it immediately, and they can dip in and out of it. And it actually just won 4 awards, which I'm quite proud of.
Oh, congratulations.
Thank you. Yeah.
That is wonderful. Congratulations. Well, any particular award you'd like to mention?
Yes, well, it was through 2 in the States, actually 2 in America and 2 in Australia, and they were around the categories of well-being and work-life balance were the main categories. So,
terrific. And,
which means it's hit the mark, because that's exactly, you know, the message that I want to share. So, yeah, it was a work in progress, and my next book's going to be How I Nearly Burnt Out Writing a Burnout Book.
Well, that I'm sure also would have quite a large audience.
Yes. Yeah, and it was a process, as you know. Writing a book is a whole process, and it's very different from the beginning of what you think it will be to the end product. Yeah, it was a great process to go through. So really enjoyed that process, and I love getting the feedback from readers from all over the world saying, you know, how it's helping them through difficult situations, or through cancer, or it's helped them through their marriage, or so sometimes quite surprising comments are coming through, and it really touches my heart, because that's exactly what I wanted to do, to support the individual that picks it up off the shelf, takes it home, and takes something that can help them in their life.
Hi there, Robin here. Have you been considering writing a thought leadership book that grows your business? How about writing a quality, standout book with a real book publishing deal behind it that not only grows your business, but also grows your influence and reach? In case you're new to the Author's Corner, my name is Robin Colucci, and I help world-class experts write world-changing books that get published. With over 30 years of experience in the publishing industry, I have helped clients write and publish books with Big 5 and other top publishers. Many have gone on to become bestsellers, from Amazon all the way up to the New York Times. And others have increased their business income 600 times or more as a result of their book and partnering with me and my team. If you are a top-notch expert who is ready to write your world-changing book, go schedule a free consultation call with one of my trusted team members today. We have a limited number of slots available, and we only take clients who are committed to the process and want to get their book started now. If that sounds like you, go to www.worldchangingbooks.com/application to apply for one of our exclusive spots. Once again, that link is www.worldchangingbooks.com/application. Now, back to the show.
Yeah, and that does bring up a point. I think a lot of times we associate, or at least when I hear about burnout, it's so often associated with career and work. Mm. But from what you're sharing, you know, obviously there's other layers to it. Do you think people are picking up your book because they're feeling burnout at work and then they're discovering other things? Or do you think they're already feeling burnout like in other ways?
Yeah, both. And the title is Beating Burnout, Finding Balance. So the second part of it, finding balance, also appeals to people. So I think it's a wide range. And very often what I hear is somebody picks it up, like let's say the husband picks it up and he's a bit burnt out, and then the wife ends up reading it and says, wow, I've got some great tips in there. And I love that. It's fantastic. So it can appeal to a wide range of people. Initially, I did think it was going to be for the workplace, but it's not just the workplace. And when you look at the WHO, the category that they say it's resulting from chronic workplace stress, it's not only workplace stress. It can be household stress. It can be relationship stress. It can be illness stress. It can be family stress. So there are so many stressors that are outside of the workplace. Yes, the workplace is a big part, but there are so many other stressors.
Yeah, that's what was occurring to me when you were just sharing that. That's why I asked that question, because it seems like these days, I don't even watch the news because I can't stand it. It makes me so stressed out, you know? And I'm like, I don't want to add any unnecessary stress. So like once, maybe a couple times a week, I read the Washington Post 7, yes. You know, what are the 7 most important things I need to know? And then I just get back on with my life, because it's just, it makes me feel, you know, helpless and crazy.
Yeah, we live in a world that we are bombarded by all this media and news. We don't need to actually search for it because it's in our face every day. I was hearing something recently, quote that says that we take in more information in one single day today in this modern world than somebody in the 15th century would take in a whole year, which is the equivalent of like 274 newspapers per day without even trying. It's just always there in our face. And we cannot possibly take all that information in. Our capacity is limited. So we're overwhelmed just by waking up in the morning and looking at our smartphone and, you know, getting all these, you know, stimuli constantly through the day. And that has to have an impact on you.
Right. And that's what I'm thinking. Like, so that's the thing about burnout, right? Because it's like, if you don't create, like you say, whatever these self-care strategies are and commit to them, then you just really can't, who could escape burnout if you don't really?
Yeah.
Right. Because then it's just a constant influx of stimuli, stress. There's just endless things to worry about, right? There's there's never been more to worry about.
Yeah, and it is about creating boundaries, like your own boundaries. Yeah, what are your boundaries? Mm-hmm. If you're someone that gets home after work and then has dinner and then takes the laptop out and starts, I'll just answer a couple of emails, and then before you know it, you're working until 11 o'clock at night, and then you go to bed and you're stimulated because you're thinking about work, so you can't sleep. And then you don't sleep, and then you wake up already, you know, in a reactive way, and it just has this cumulative effect. So it is about creating crystal clear boundaries. Am I home? Am I recharging? Am I resting? Or am I at work? And one of the big problems in this modern world is many people are working from home, and you know, there is no transition from home to home, you know, from work to home. So it's like you have to create these boundaries. I personally, at the end of my workday, whether I'm working from home or not, is I get changed out of my work clothes. I put on my casual clothes, and it signals to me that I'm off now. And to my children also, they can see, okay, you know, daddy's home now.
Oh,
he's
right.
Off.
Yeah. So
it's a physical signal. And I promise myself not to take my smartphone out and do emails after hours.
Very, very, very smart. Very smart. And yeah, I think that it is wonderful not to have to get in the car and do a commute. But you do need to have boundaries. And I think the other thing that, you know, can be tempting if you're not disciplined with working, because I've worked at home for long before COVID, like I had zero lifestyle change with except for seeing friends. but, you know, I think it's like people used to say to me, well, how can you work from home? Because there's so many things you could take care of at home, or so many things to entice your attention at home. And it is, you just have to really focus on, this is what I'm doing now, and then this is what I'm not doing now.
Yes.
This is what I'm doing later. And I think it is also, you can, you know, for me, I set up, I mean, I might stop work at different times depending on what has, you know, what's going on. But once I'm done, I'm done.
Right.
And I also have a little thing that I want to share because I think it's fun. And around every day, around like that, you know that time of day where you get kind of tired,
yes.
like between 2 and 4.
Yes.
And if I know I still have a couple more hours of work, especially then, I take horizontal time.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I don't take a nap. I just go lie down on the couch in my sunroom and soak up some rays and just pet the dog.
Yeah.
And it really does, you know, just 10 minutes, but it really does recharge.
Totally. I agree with you. It's like taking a nap.
And I go from feeling like wiped out to, okay, let's get these last couple hours done and then we're
yeah.
done.
Oh, that's fantastic. Yeah. I think it's a great habit. It is about creating these rituals and habits that work for you. For me at that time, I'll do a meditation, which is very similar. I'll stop and I'll do a 5 or 10 minute meditation and, you know, recharge the batteries. But that's a great habit. And it is about creating these rituals that work for you because everybody has different, you know, flow. So some people are better in the morning. Some people are better in the afternoon. So it's finding the way that you work the best. But no matter which way you work, it is important to take regular renewal breaks, that you're renewing your energy. So for you, that afternoon slump is not productive. So you take a renewal break and then you know that the next couple of hours are going to be productive.
Exactly. And I think, you know, it's kind of fun, right, to experiment and discover what recharges you, what drains you.
Yes.
And, you know, you can make it fun.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. I slot that's a really good point. I slot my day around drainers and energizers because there's certain things that drain you in your workday. And it might be clients. It might be a person that you work with. It might be a type of work. It might be, you know, doing admin or something that can be quite draining. And then you've got clients and people that energize you or work that energizes you. So I look at my day. For example, if I'm coaching people, I will not coach 4 mental health clients in a row.
Yeah, that's probably a very
that's
good
right.
idea.
So I'll do a mental health client and then I'll do an athlete and then I'll do an executive. So I've got that sort of flow of energy. So it is about recognizing what are the things that drain you in your day? What are the things that energize you? And how can you balance that every day? So then at the end of the day, you're not drained and exhausted and fall asleep on the couch. You've got energy still. So you've got energy to spare for your home life. Because if you have a family, you want to be there for your family and for your partner. You don't want to be exhausted every night. So I'm glad that you have that little afternoon siesta. Good idea.
Must be part of my Italian
yes.
genetics. But you know, it makes me think also, are you familiar with the Colby? It's like that corporate test that like they, you know, your different kind of
personality types.
Well, it's like you're a quick start or a fact
yes,
finder
okay.
or a follow through
yep.
or an implementer.
Profiling.
And when they talk about how they divide up the categories, it's interesting because what they say, and this just reminded me of it, because what they say is that it's not that you can or can't do activities in something that you score low in the Colby. It's really about how much energy you have for it. So, for example, I'm a quick start, which means I can be visionizing, visionary mode, you know, most of my waking hours. But if you ask me to assemble even a dish rack, I'm going to lose patience in about 30 seconds,
yes.
right? So I'm like a 1 implementer and a 9 quick start,
yeah.
right? So I don't know. Do you ever use tools like
yeah.
that with your clients?
Yeah, work to your strengths. Yeah. There's here in Australia, there's some different profiling systems. There's the HBDMI and there's a whole range of different ones. I take them all. They're good. They give you a bit of a benchmark, but I also take them with a bit of a pinch of salt too, because you can also learn other strengths. So it is play to your strengths, of course.
Yeah.
Play to your strengths, but don't avoid the things that you don't like doing too. So I do a practice called Seek the Uncomfortable. So I look for the things that I don't like doing in my day, and you know, they might be uncomfortable conversations. They might be
right,
something
right.
that I don't really enjoy doing and actually stirs up emotions in me, but I actually meet them head first. I actually like will meet
yeah.
them first up in the
Get
day.
Get those out of the way, huh?
Yeah, exactly. Eat that frog so you can actually yeah. do those things and get better at it. So it is, yes, play to your strengths, but also, you know, work on the things that you're less strong at and get more comfortable with that.
Yeah, and just realize that you might have to allocate more energy to the things that you don't enjoy, right? They're going to feel like they're more taxing, like doing your taxes
yes.
is more taxing.
Yes.
And, you know, just knowing that, okay, hey, I know I can do this, but I don't, enjoy it, so I don't have a ton of energy for it. So I have to be mindful of that and maybe not get frustrated with myself if I can't, you know, if I can only work on it for 20 minutes and then I need a break, right? Yeah. And not try to necessarily plow through, but you do have to do it. But we all have those things, right?
Yes.
That we hate to do, but it's just like maybe understanding your strengths helps you understand and what you truly enjoy helps you understand about budgeting that energy.
Yeah, it is.
Okay, I'm just rambling.
I agree with you. It is really all about energy management. Energy management. Yeah. Time management is one thing, but also we need to manage our energy. So if you're trying to push through on a big task that's requiring your cognition and you're finding that's getting really frustrating, maybe you need to sort of break up your time in different blocks. So when it comes to being productive, there's quick wins. You know, those quick wins, it might be a quick email, a quick call. They feel good because you get a little dopamine hit. It goes ping, ping, ping. That feels fantastic. But you can't spend your whole day in quick wins. Otherwise, you won't do those harder, longer, cognitive tasks.
Of course.
I'll do that tomorrow because I don't have the energy now. So it is about allocating time and allocating time and energy together. So when you,
And I think you have to be honest with yourself too, right? Because it might, you don't just want to say, like you said, well, I only do quick wins.
Yeah.
Because that's not realistic. But, and then sometimes you just truly, that's all you got.
That's right.
Is a few quick wins and then you're done. And that's okay too.
That's right. Yeah. That's right. And that's why if you try to go against that. So when going back to what I said at the beginning with the 200 people that I interviewed for the book, 90% of them didn't realize they were burning out until it was too late. The other 10% was divided into two groups and in two lots of around about 5% each. So the other ones, they sort of felt they were burning out. They felt that something wasn't quite right, but they just kept pushing on anyway. They just kept plowing through, ignoring the signs. So that was one lot of 5%. And the other ones, they sort of felt something wasn't right, but they actually didn't have any techniques or tools to self-regulate. So that's where it's divided. So if you can actually recognize, hey, I don't have the energy today, but I can do this to actually help me. You know, I can actually, you know, support myself, or maybe even just give yourself permission to have a break or a nap or recharge in some way. We are not machines. We cannot keep going 24 hours a day without any consequences. And the consequence is poor mental health and burnout.
So I am astounded that 90% of the people had no idea.
Yeah. Wow. Or they just felt something was out of sorts, but they couldn't like put their finger on it. And especially high achievers and high performers and entrepreneurs, they just go, 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 go. And sometimes even the passion fuels that. Like an entrepreneur that is very passionate about their work, they can be their own worst enemies because they just keep going because they're so passionate.
Right.
But we cannot keep going that way. The worst case of burnout that I saw in the work that I do or have seen is, you know, one of my clients was referred by a doctor actually, and very passionate entrepreneur, businessman, multimillionaire, owning multiple companies, but he was working across different time zones. So he was doing the US, Australia, and UK time zones. And he almost like wore it as a badge and say, oh yeah, I worked all night. I worked at the lounge, and then I went to the airport, and then I worked on the aeroplane, and then I got to LA and I worked at the LAX airport, and then I got to my office. I only had 2 hours sleep, and you know, like wore it as a badge. So mentally he actually kept going because he felt like he could keep going, but physically his body said, no way, I'm not doing this anymore. And it actually stopped producing certain hormones. So his endocrine system was shot. Wow. His nervous system wasn't functioning. He stopped producing testosterone and his circadian rhythm was out. His melatonin and serotonin production was compromised. Then he had multiple organ failure and he was in intensive care in hospital for weeks and months in hospital to recover. And it's been about 2 years now and he's still not back to fully functioning.
Wow.
Yeah. So that's an extreme
version. Well, that answers the question, what are the consequences of going until you keel, you know, tip over.
Yes.
And there you go. Holy cow. That's serious stuff. I mean, he almost died.
Yeah, yeah. And a lot of high achievers are like that. I got a lot of calls during the COVID pandemic there because we had to slow down a little bit. And sometimes CEOs, executives that, you know, are used to go, 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 they didn't know how to slow down. And more so, sometimes when they slowed down, they didn't know themselves, and some of them didn't like what they saw. because their work is their identity. Their work is their distraction for life. And they're so passionate about that. And they didn't have any other things there. So it was a really interesting time in my coaching work that I was meeting CEOs, executives, high performers, not knowing sort of what else there is outside of go, go, go. And so it's a different mindset.
That's kind of a hidden blessing in COVID, right? To be forced to slow down.
To rediscover yourself and to rediscover what's important for you in your life. And so, you know, a very interesting time. But we do live in interesting times. And COVID was a big, not spending too much time talking about COVID, but it was a big thing that shook up our mental health. And we can't deny that now the residual effect of that is happening. So children that went through COVID, for example, you know, even through their schooling, are suffering. And people are suffering more anxiety, and burnout is on the rise because this residual hangover from COVID. We don't go through 2 years of this, you know, mental health issues and suddenly pop out and say, everything's fine, everything's good. Like it has a residual lag.
Huh. So what do you think is the residual piece of it? Is it just the anxiety of?
Yes.
Or, I mean, I'm curious. Yes.
Yeah. Part of it is the anxiety. Part of it is the socialization. Yeah. We were locked away for times. So, we went through, I followed it quite closely as I work in also psychiatric clinics. I work in mental health clinics, and I followed it quite closely because at the very beginning, there was a lot of uncertainty and fear and anxiety. It was all new.
Yeah.
And that was quite scary. Yeah. So it affected our emotions. And then over time, there was a lot of isolation and depression and, you know, disconnected from society and people around you. And then there was a bit of sort of post-traumatic stress from all that. So that doesn't just disappear automatically. That's sort of ingrained in us a little bit. So we need to, you know, rebuild our toolkit, you know, rebuild our resilience, rebuild our things that make us feel good, fill up our cup again in a way. We have to fill up our cup.
Yes, that's right. Well, and I would imagine, I know for sure after our conversation today that a great resource for refilling your cup is beating burnout and finding balance.
Sure is. Yeah, sure is. A great resource. Also in audiobook version too. So that's doing really well actually. In America actually, it's doing really well.
Yeah, audiobook sales are the fastest growing sales vertical in publishing and have been for many years now, I think at least since 2018.
So yes.
No surprise there. Yes. No surprise there. All right. Well, oh my goodness, I cannot believe how quickly this time has flown. Before I let you go, Mello, though, I want to ask you my signature final question, which is, what have I not asked you that you would love to answer?
Oh, that's a good question because you covered so much in this session today. I'll stick on the audiobook theme here. So advice to authors. I recorded my own audiobook with a fantastic company and production company, and I got stuck on one word. And I got stuck on this one word for 20 minutes. For the rest, I actually did everything in record time and had to do no retakes. So for authors out there that are considering to write their own book and then read it as an audio, please don't use the word similarly. It's traumatized me forever, that word.
But you've got it.
I've got it now.
You have it forever now.
I've got it now, yes. Well, any words like that that can really stumble you. It's like similarly.
Yeah.
Similarly. So that's my parting words of wisdom.
And well chosen, well chosen, I might add. Mello, this has been absolutely delightful. So I just want to thank you again for being with us on the Author's Corner.
Thank you so much, Robin. I appreciate it.
Thank you for tuning in to another amazing episode of the Author's Corner. You're one step closer to writing the world-changing book you've dreamed about for years. To access today's show notes and other helpful resources, simply visit our website at theauthorscorner.com. A positive review would be appreciated. Until next time.